Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, en podcast från Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. I den här podden samtalar vi med specialister från olika områden inom hästmedicinen. Med det gemensamt att de delar vår och din passion för hästarna. Välkommen tillbaka till Hästveterinärerna, podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och arbetar med häst. Jag heter som vanligt Maria Willemsson. Och i det fjärde och sista avsnittet med Sanna Lindåse från SLU så pratar vi vidare om utfodring av insulindysreglerade hästar. Och Sanna tar också upp de viktigaste myterna och missförstånden kring detta. Vi pratar också om läkemedelsbehandling av EMS och om Sannas pågående forskning på det här ämnet.
So we've been talking about the feeding, and I'm aware of that this is something that many veterinarians feel a little bit insecure around, that they don't feel that they have all this knowledge that they should have or that they think they should have, even if it's not their main main expertise. But there are, on the other hand, also many owners that will come to the vet for feeding advice, for actual nutritional advice. And there are a lot of myths and misconceptions and old stable truths going on also with the feeding. So if you have some good like tips for the vets listening out there who maybe feel that they are not the biggest experts on nutrition, but at least they should know these traps that you can fall in, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, so much. I know so much, and I know we're not educated in like feeding, not so much, not here in Sweden at least. So it is very common to feel a bit insecure. I can really relate to that. But there are, as you just pointed out, there are some common misunderstandings, and I think that the main thing that you as a veterinarian always should say is that you need to have a analysis of your feed. Otherwise, we do not do what you are feeding it. So that is the first thing. And so when it comes to these myths, I think that the most important is that for some reason, it is a very common misunderstanding that it is appropriate to feed a insulin dysregulated horse with a hay that have been harvested over more than 1 year, like overstored, old hay.
Yeah, last year's hay, yeah.
Yeah, last year's hay. And and that is like totally worthless because the sugar content will not decrease during storage.
Yeah.
Nothing will happen with the sugar content. So this strategy will not help. So that is something that we can kill this myth. Mm. And I think one other thing that is very many times misunderstood by owners is that horses with insulin dysregulation should be on unfertilized grasses and forages. They should be fed unfertilized harvested grasses and forages. So they think that this will decrease the sugar content, but actually it's the total opposite way around, and that is because when it is unfertilized, the forages are depleted on energy, so they will not grow in the same way. But as long as there is sunshine, the photosynthesis will go on, which will produce glucose. So many times the unfertilized forages are higher in sugar. So that is something that also it's good to be aware of.
Yeah.
So I think that is the most important thing. Back in the days, I think another important misunderstanding was that the EMS horse or the insulin dysregulated horse always were fat or obese or overweight at least. But that is something that I think we are more aware about now, that they can be perfectly, can have a normal body condition and they can still have EMS. And the obesity is not the cause. Mm. It is a coexisting comorbidity in the horse that are prone to develop insulin dysregulation. And it can affect the insulin dysregulation negatively, but it is not the true cause. So that is also one thing that have back in the days been a big common misunderstanding, I would say. But I think these are the most important. So if you know this about feeding, you come very far as a clinician, I would say.
You don't need to also become to get a master in animal science.
No, this is enough. And you can always find someone that knows this better that you can send the horse owner to. But if you know a little, that is very, very helpful, I would say.
I guess the same. The many owners ask about the same questions as well. So
yes, definitely. Yeah.
When it comes to the risk of laminitis for these horses who are insulin dysregulated and for the horses with PPID, we've only been touching the obesity part, and we're not going to have really time to dig in more to that. But when it comes to the actual risk of laminitis, when it comes to management, what is the most important factor? Is it the weight loss, that the obese horse drops its weight, or the sugar content of the hay? Or what would you say is the most important management factor?
Yeah, difficult. But I would say that, okay, we now talk about ID horses and PPID horses with ID. So not the PPID horses without insulin dysregulation. So just to make that clear. So, and you mentioned different factors here. We talk about weight loss. Yes, that is important if you have a obese horse, because insulin sensitivity will be better if you decrease your weight.
Yeah.
So yes, you should induce weight loss if you have a obese horse. That is important. Mm. The sugar content in the feed we have talked a lot about. So yes, that is important. And that goes like hand in hand with posture turnout or not and so forth. We have been into that a bit. Hoof trimming. Yes, hoof trimming is extremely important if you have a laminitic patient. Mm. So you need to take care of all of these factors. So I don't think I can say that this or this is more important than one other. So you need to do everything. That's the bad thing. You need to do everything and be aware of that the degree of insulin resistance or insulin dysregulation is the far most important factor that will affect the postprandial insulin response.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to work on everything. And we have to come into that later. But the ones that cannot be managed may be candidates for pharmacological treatments in the future.
That's a segue into our next topic then.
Yeah.
Are there any chances? What do we have on the horizon? Because there are some options, some human drugs that can be used with maybe not that high success rate maybe not the best options. But what do we see here on the medicine side?
We can elaborate on that, because that is one. We are in the middle of one pharmacological study right now, so I think this is very exciting. And as you mentioned here, we have tried to treat horses. I mean, we have been struggling with the need of a pharmacological treatment for these horses for years and years. So there are many studies, or at least a few studies, that have investigated different human anti-diabetic drugs. One of them is metformin. I think many of our colleagues out there have heard about metformin and maybe also use this as a off-label treatment for insulin dysregulation. And I think metformin, there are clinicians that I think have a positive treatment effect, but when we look at what is scientifically the evidence here, they are very few. And we know from studies that metformin has a very low oral bioavailability in horses. So the most of it goes out with the poo. And that's like very expensive treatment for nothing. Mm. But it has been discussed that maybe it has a local effect on the glucose uptake in the intestines that can actually decrease the plasma concentration of glucose. So we have been going a bit up and down with this drug, but actually recently, I think it was in during ACVM meeting the last year, there was actually an abstract published where horses with IDEA had been treated with metformin, and they also had a placebo group, and actually they found no differences in insulin concentrations between these two groups of horses. So I think we need to take this into account. I mean, we are so desperate to have a drug that we take the best that we have.
Yeah.
But the future looks more like promising because we are now working. Oh, sorry, I just had to say quickly, there are also, except for metformin, another human antidiabetic drug that is called pioglitazone that also have been evaluated in a few, I'm not sure here, but at least some horse studies. And pioglitazone has been actually shown to be able to decrease the insulin concentrations in affected horses. Maybe not a very pronounced response, but still. But there is not so much what I know, research going on using pioglitazone. And from our Scandinavian point of view, the drug is extremely expensive. Mm. So it's not even possible to treat a horse with that drug.
Not an option.
And if we were to, we need more evidence, yeah. I would say. The next thing is the SGLT2 inhibitors. So SGLT2 inhibitor is impossible to say, and the whole name is sodium glucose cotransporter 2 inhibitors. Mm. So so this class of drug is also, it is a quite new antidiabetic drug, and it acts by targeting the renal glucose reabsorption.
Yep.
So this leads to excretion of glucose through urine, and this in turn lead to a decrease in plasma glucose concentrations.
Mm.
And it is a drug that is added to human patients that are treated with metformin, pioglitazone, and other as a complementary treatment.
Yeah.
And it has been investigated in a few, maybe more than a few, I would say, now studies also in horses.
Mm.
And we are in a very, very interesting part here, because I think all of us working with SGLT2 inhibitors have had quite striking results when it comes to decrease the degree of hyperinsulinemia in these horses. So the theory is here that if you reduce the degree of, if you lower the plasma glucose, this will decrease the stimulation of the beta cells to secrete insulin.
Yeah.
So you will also lower the postprandial insulin concentrations.
Mm.
And we have had very, very good results, not only our research group, but other research group in different parts of the world. So this is I would be extremely surprised if we, in the next couple of years, do not have treatment recommendations using SGLT2 inhibitors. But from our experience working with this class of drug, so, okay, we can say that it is effective, but it is not a drug that is appropriate to treat all insulin dysregulated horses.
Okay.
So very important here is that this is a complementary treatment for the horses that can not only be managed with feeding regimes, exercise, and so forth. Because if the horse is not as sick, if the horse is like mildly insulin dysregulated, there are higher risks for side effects.
Yeah.
And so it is not a drug that you just treat the horse with and then you say bye-bye, have a nice time.
Go to pasture.
Go to pasture and we'll see you in a couple of years or so. No, that doesn't work. So you need to have a very good dialogue with this animal owner, and it is necessary to take follow-up blood samples and to maybe make management corrections, maybe make changes in the feeding regime and so forth, because it is a potent drug and it will depend on how sick is the horse, what dose will you treat the horse with, and what is the horse eating. All of these factors needs to be like balanced to each other. So it is difficult. It is really difficult.
Yeah.
And actually, after have working with this drug for like 3 years now, I get more and more like, I would not say scared, but I feel that, yeah, it is a good compliment and it is a very good compliment, but it is aiming for the very sick horses.
Yeah.
And it is not a substitute for the management factors.
Yeah.
It is a compliment. That is very important.
Yeah.
But because, extremely, yeah, extremely exciting that we are close to be able to help these extremely sick horses that we cannot manage,
yeah,
in any other way. And I think for the animal owners, they are desperate.
Yeah.
They are desperate when they have, they've been doing everything they can. And the next step is to euthanize the horse.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, this is a lifelong condition, right?
Yeah.
And I think no one, to least to say the horse owners, will expect to have modality, some treatment that will just cure and then you won't have to care for it again. Of course, this is a condition that will always have to be managed and monitored and
exactly,
constantly being taken care of. And I think if anyone, the owners of these ponies, because they are mostly ponies, they are very aware of that already, to just to find some sort of relief from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will be more than enough. But it sounds very exciting.
Yes.
And I'm hoping to that we can hear more from you the coming years then, and your results from these studies.
Yeah, but definitely we have to come back to this.
Yeah.
We will do it in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I know that there's research going on in different parts of the world using different SGLT2 inhibitors. So we are getting closer. And again, it's so super cool that,
yeah,
we may be able to treat these very, very sick horses. So, yeah, just very happy to be part of it, actually. Yeah.
So we're closing in on, we've been talking quite a while, but it's very interesting. And I hope that our listeners also think that. I certainly do, and I think that we could go on and on. But if you would like to just summarize the most important take-home message that you would like to tell your colleagues out there in the field, your fellow practitioners out there, when it comes to diagnostics of insulin dysregulation or PPID, or when it comes to treatment or management, or both. What would that be?
Yeah, I think we have been into a lot of it already, but I think the most important take-home message is that it's actually about diagnostic, that do not forget to perform your insulin dysregulation diagnosis, because if your aim at decreasing the risk of laminitis, this is your key. You need to have information on the degree of insulin dysregulation. And as we know that, if you go back to yourself, so how do I work with these horses? So if I say that insulin dysregulation is the most important cause for laminitis, okay, so that means that if you in your records find out that you are sampling more horses in your patient population for ACTH than you do for ID, this is maybe the time to like change that and change the behavior and turn this around, because that will help you identify the laminitic prone horses.
Mm.
So that is one take home message. And also, I think that we should be careful in terms of sampling horses without symptoms of PPID, and also know that we interpret these cutoffs in a proper way. So that is, I think that is my most important, and that includes both insulin dysregulated horses and PPID horses.
Mm.
So, and I was into it, but get to know your, I didn't say so much about the diagnostic methods for ID, but there are different, but from the Scandinavian point of view, I think the oral sugar test is nice to use, not because we have developed it, because it is quite, it is easy to perform, but there is a tons of other things you can do. So the most important thing is to get to know your method, learn how to do it, learn where to send your blood samples so that you relate your results to the cutoffs that have been used to set the method up, as we have so many different insulin assays being used in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
One more important take-home message is when we have been discussing this management and also treatment for insulin dysregulation. So important here is to point out that this includes both horses that are ID and have EMS and the PPID horses with ID.
Yeah.
So I know that I have said it earlier. So when you have a PPID horse, you need to figure out, do we have both PPID and ID?
Yeah.
So we can treat these two like accordingly, separately.
Yeah,
yeah, accordingly. That is a better way to describe it. So everything counts for both, but as long as the horse is insulin dysregulated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is sort of what determines how cautious you have to be around the feed and how with the sugar content and the pasture and everything. That's sort of, it's determined by the insulin dysregulation and not the PPID or not PPID.
Exactly. If you know that, you come so far with these patients. Mm. If you take care of both, then you can you do a lot of good, actually. So yeah, that is one of the most important key take home message, I would say.
Thank you so much, Sanna, for sharing all this super interesting, super exciting knowledge with us today. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Oh, the same. It's so exciting to be able to just talk about this with someone who is interested. So I hope that the listeners also will have some more knowledge after listening to this pod. I hope so, at least.
I am sure. I'm positive about that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. See you. Bye.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, glöm inte att trycka prenumerera i din podcast-app så att du inte missar några avsnitt. Berätta också gärna om vad du tycker genom att ge en recension. Vi tar gärna emot tips på kommande gäster och ämnen, och våra kontaktuppgifter finns i poddens beskrivning.